this is our last chance to do it right the first time and maintain the complexity intact so that the system can reproduce itself.
Pebble mine opponents take their case to the EPA in Washington, D.C. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 23rd of September. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an autistic boy from Unalakleet builds a new relationship with a service dog.
Just this past week, our family has never heard Logan say as many words as he had in his entire 10 years of living.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance has a simple request. If you smoke, take it outside. Smoking hurts more than just you. Secondhand smoke increases the risk of coronary heart disease and kills nearly 50,000 non-smoking Americans every year. Smoking around your kids causes chronic and life-threatening diseases and is linked to sudden infant death syndrome. If you choose to smoke, make a choice that protects others who don't. Take it outside. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Fishermen and Alaska Native leaders opposed to the Pebble Mine project are in Washington, D.C., meeting with officials at the Environmental Protection Agency. They want the EPA to protect Bristol Bay, which could block the mining project. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Thomas Tilden is the chief of the Chilhoyung Tribal Council of Dillingham and advocates for Bristol Bay, which for him means fighting the proposed Pebble Mine. He says it could hurt the fish and other wild resources on which his tribe is dependent. Tilden's been fighting the proposed copper and gold mine for a while, but he says this week's trip to Washington, D.C. feels different.
We're doing less explaining and we're getting down to the details of what we think the solution is, and a lot of emphasis has been placed on that. This particular trip.
The solution, according to Tilden, is to have the EPA step in now and forbid or restrict discharging mine waste into area waterways. It could do that through the Clean Water Act and a particular section called 404C. A few months ago, a half dozen federally recognized tribes and a fishermen's advocacy group wrote the EPA asking it to use the Clean Water Act to protect the region. Tilden says this particular regulation has only been used by the feds 12 times in nearly three decades.
It's a very unique tool that EPA has. And when you look at the 12 times that they've invoked 404C, it has been for protection of either habitat or species. And that's what we're talking about here. I really firmly believe that we're going to be the lucky 13.
Tilden says EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson's visit to Dillingham in July educated her and her staff about the area and the proposed mine. Another opponent of Pebble is Bob Waldrop, the executive director of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. He says they don't want to wait for Pebble Mine to start the permitting process and then react. Instead, the opponents want the EPA to act preemptively.
Once the applications start to appear, they will be permits for how things are developed, how big the culverts are, or how much pollution is permissible, which salmon streams we're going to impair. Those are all how questions. The first question we should be asking is whether.
Waldrop and his allies say the Clean Water Act's 404C process is the best way to talk about whether the area should have a mine. But John Shively, the CEO for Pebble Limited Partnership, which hopes to build the mine, says using the Clean Water Act would be premature and jumps ahead in the process.
We do not have a proposal. I mean, we're still working on getting a proposal. We think that there is a permitting process that, you know, that we should be allowed to go through, and when assuming we decide to go into that process, that's the appropriate time for EPA and other state and federal agencies, and there'll be a number of them, to take a look at the project.
Shively's group, hoping to build the mine, is a partnership between two mining companies. Pebble Partnership wrote the EPA saying they think the use of the Clean Water Act to prevent their project is wrong. Alaska's Governor Sean Parnell agrees, and he also wrote to the EPA that it should wait to weigh in until the permitting process starts. Parnell says otherwise it would waste agency time and resources, and he pledged to make sure any new development projects protect the resources of Bristol Bay. Pebble's John Shively warns that if the Obama administration makes a blanket ruling for the region, it could affect more than just the Pebble project.
If EPA is to look at this issue and make a designation they have to look at something broader than just pebble, because if there's a reason, for instance, not to put some kind of mine waste fill in, let's say, wetlands in that region, it's not just the pebble area. It's the whole watershed, or actually two watersheds. So, you know, what's been asked for, I think, is a lot broader than people think. And that's another reason to wait to the permitting process, because if you get in the permitting process, then it will be just about pebble.
But Bob Waldrop with the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association is optimistic the EPA listened this week as he and other mine opponents laid out their case. He hopes the Obama administration sees this as an opportunity to protect an area rather than fix it after the fact.
As somebody said, this is our last chance to do it right the first time and maintain the complexity intact so that the system can reproduce itself rather than try and remediate our way back to an environmental healthy situation.
An EPA official said in a statement to APRN that it has not made a decision on whether to use the Clean Water Act to restrict or prohibit the mine and that it's reviewing its options. But she said the agency does have concerns about the pebble mine's potential impact to fisheries and the local environment. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Students, professors, and parents today asked the UA Board of Regents to keep higher education affordable in Alaska. The Alaska University System has one of the lowest tuition rates in the United States. According to the Washington Higher Education Coordinating Board, resident undergraduate students in Alaska pay an average of $5,133 a year for tuition and fees. That's more than just six other states, and $2,800 less than the national average. The regents are scheduled to vote tomorrow on a 5% increase to lower division undergraduate tuition beginning in fall 2011, then a 10 to 12% increase on top of that for all undergraduate credits starting in the fall of 2012. As KTOO's Casey Kelly reports, many fear the proposal will price students out of a college education.
Peter Finn is a University of Alaska Anchorage senior majoring in political science and philosophy. He's also a member of the UA Coalition of Student Leaders. They've countered the proposal before the regents with one that would leave tuition alone in 2012 and raise it by just 7% in 2013.
Even a 3% reduction in what they're looking at for an increase makes a huge difference for student pocketbooks. And of course, when they come back and they increase tuition again next year, by 7% or 10% or whatever it is, we're going to be saving them even more money.
The regents previously approved a 5% tuition increase beginning next fall. So if the board approves another 5% hike, it would actually be a 10% increase for all undergraduate lower division credits starting next school year. Finn says it's unfair for the board to come in and raise the rate again.
Revising tuition that has already been approved breaches a sort of contract that the board has had with students, which is that they will approve tuition increases 2 years out so that students have time to plan and structure their budgets.
He says the increase on the table right now puts students at risk of dropping out or taking longer to graduate in order to make ends meet.
That's sometimes what we're talking about. It's not maybe a student dropping out, but maybe a student taking 9 credits instead of 12 and then taking longer to finish their education and having tuition go up even more while they're taking that extra time. It almost seems like a vicious circle in a way.
The UA Faculty Alliance has taken a neutral position on the proposal. Alliance Chair John Petratus says professors didn't feel comfortable telling regents how much to raise tuition, not knowing all of the implications. But he told the board that faculty supports keeping higher education as affordable as possible.
Especially given that the state of Alaska is one of the few states that does not have an adequate needs-based financial aid program.
Tammy Mulick, a parent of two Juneau middle school students, said she fears what tuition will be like when her kids are ready for college.
If you could cut corners just to do anything to keep more kids in school and to get my kids and their generation into school, but I'm feeling a little hopeless. I really am.
Finn and other student leaders were given half an hour to present their case to the regents today. That followed protests on all three major University of Alaska campuses Wednesday. The board will take more public comment tomorrow before voting on the increase. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Last night, APRN incorrectly reported the tuition increase would mean a $3,000 hike by 2013. If regents chose the highest increase of 12%, the increase would be around $1,000 per school year. The University of Alaska Fairbanks is the new home of the state's only U.S. patent office. The office, formerly run out of the Anchorage Library, is moving to the Keith B. Mather Library at the UAF Geophysical Institute. Librarian Judy Triplehorn says the office will help inventors and entrepreneurs navigate the DVD-formatted federal database.
We will be assisting people in searching for trademark and patent information. And we will not be replacing a patent attorney, but we will be helping people. We will be the first step if they're interested in filing for a patent or trademark.
Triplehorn says if someone has an idea, the office can help search the database of existing patents or trademarks. She says the office will also have paperwork needed to file applications with the Federal Patent Office. Anchorage's Lusac Library long housed the Alaska Patent Office, but a librarian there, Doug McAllister, says tight staffing and declining use led them to seek a new home for the facility. He says UAF is a good fit.
A lot of times you will have patent and trademark depositories located at academic settings because there's a lot of research going on there, and they're more likely to generate interest in obtaining patents, particularly. Not so much trademarks, but patents. So it's probably better that it's at a university setting than a public library setting.
McAllister says the patent office was first offered to the University of Alaska Anchorage, but when UA declined, UAF was contacted. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Chickaloon Tribal School struggles to keep its doors open.
It's really about passing on those Athabaskan values, as well as the language and culture.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Scott McAdams spent the last 2 days campaigning and fundraising in Fairbanks. Yesterday, the Sitka mayor, flanked by union representatives, laid out his positions on the economy and jobs, saying America must return to fundamental policies that support the middle class.
When you take a look at the lowering percentages, the decline in workers in America who benefit from collective bargaining, from the ability to organize, I believe we can change the course in this country. But we have to make sure that we don't have folks who have such extreme views that they believe that a right-to-work state, which in fact means a right to work at lower than a living wage, and or people who support solely the interest of people in corporate boardrooms, we need to send a working person, a former union member, and an Alaskan to Washington, D.C.
McAdams said he'll work to eliminate corporate tax loopholes that reward companies that outsource jobs overseas. He says Alaskan resource development, including opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling, is an environmentally responsible choice. He says United States National Environmental and Worker Protections make this country the best place to develop resources. Referring to the minerals in his cell phone, McAdams said they should be coming from Alaska.
We consume things like this that where there are minerals that are taken from places like Peru in the Andes that have no environmental standards, have no capacity in governance to be able to ensure that things are done safely, and they also don't have workers there who have the capacity or have had the ability to organize and share in the wealth of that development. Why not get those minerals from Alaska? Because when we do it here, we do it right, and we also put people to work.
McAdams also stressed the importance of funding education and job training and the need for a comprehensive energy plan that begins with responsible fossil fuel development and transitions to renewables. A tribal school in Alaska that was honored for its excellence by the Harvard Kennedy School of Government is struggling to keep its doors open. From member station KNBA, Jacqueline Estes reports.
In 2002, the Yani Da'a School in Chicoloon received high honors from the Harvard Honoring Nations Program for its effectiveness in handling critical concerns and challenges. Located about 60 miles north of Anchorage, the school boasts high academic achievement and low dropout rates. Education Director Gabe Carman says Yani Da'a is unique.
We're the only tribally run K through 12 education school in Alaska. And we've been in operation for 18 years now. And we are open to everyone. But we, of course, started the school to help our own tribal citizens learn the Athabaskan language and culture.
The school got its start when Chicoloon Clan grandmother Katie Wade volunteered at a prison and met men who knew little of their heritage and had little sense of belonging in their home communities. She started classes to teach the Athabaskan language and culture. That led to Yani Da'a, which combines Western academics with Athabaskan language and culture, says Carmen.
It's really about passing on those Otna Athabaskan values, as well as the language and culture. And those values include stewarding the land and of our responsibility to the environment and our people and the future generations.
Another difference from other schools is that the students learn about subjects such as current affairs, botany, science, math, and music from teachers, parents, elders, and professionals in various fields, including tribal leaders and staff in departments such as health, forestry, and computer technology. Carmen says the approach is a great success.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we get not just from everyone who is exposed to our kids, but including the Matanuska Sioux City School District mentions whenever our kids go anywhere for an event or present or anything, they're very outspoken and they're very confident. And I think a lot of that has to do with their understanding their identity of where they come from.
The school faces financial challenges, though. The state legislature receives federal funding for Alaska Native education and distributes it to municipalities and local school districts only, not to tribes.
We've been doing great academically. And as far as bringing back our language and culture, the kids have been making huge strides as far as learning the language. However, because we are a tribally run school, we don't have access to a lot of the state, any of the state and a lot of the federal monies that would normally go towards education.
Yani Da'a has been funded through private foundations, grants, and small fundraisers. However, due to the national recession, Carmen says contributions are down, and the school is working to raise a sizable amount of money.
The tribe has given us about a month to raise $38,000 to be able to keep the school open through the rest of the school year.
Carmen says the school has revamped its website so people can donate online, is writing more applications to private foundations, and holding fundraisers with food, music, and storytelling. In Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
A Fairbanks contractor and entrepreneur plans to put up a large wind farm outside Delta Junction. Mike Kraft, managing partner of Alaska Environmental Power, says the company is permitted to install 16 turbines. Kraft says the 200-foot-tall turbine will be shipped north this winter.
What we'd like to do is bring the turbines up through Valdez in March, have them at the site before breakup, and spend the summer erecting them.
Kraft's company already has turbines at Delta and on another site in Healy. Both supply power to the Golden Valley Electric Grid. Kraft says the 320-acre Delta site, which currently puts out 1 megawatt, will be up to 25 megawatts with the expansion. Kraft says the idea is to displace diesel fuel currently used to power GVEA generators.
We're doing an integration study, and we're going to try to figure out just exactly what would be turned down and to what degree. How much spinning reserve would have to be online and available to replace the wind if it fell off, for example. And so at this point, we're in the final stages of that integration study.
Kraft says the wind power is projected to displace about 8 million gallons of diesel annually.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF Fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
The marmots of the Barren Islands may be no more. Hunters and trappers hired by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service were on Sud Island in the Barrens this year, trying to do away with the introduced species. There were similar efforts on an island east of Accutan and another west of Adak, trying to do away with other invasive critters. Steve Delahanty is the manager of the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge in Homer.
They went fairly well. We worked hard on the island of Sud in the Barren system for the marmots, and we won't really know for sure until next year if we were completely successful. Hopefully, we got all of the marmots. If, in fact, a few escaped, we'll take care of that next spring or summer. The rabbit project was complicated just because we hadn't worked with the rabbits before. We ended up only working on one island, Poa Island, and we eliminated a lot of rabbits, but on our last swing through in the fall with our refuge ship, we checked and it looks like there are a few rabbits on there, so we will be back in the spring to try and complete business.
It's important to follow up next year because rabbits breed like, well, rabbits, and could quickly repopulate the small island. Steve Ebert is the wildlife biologist for the refuge.
For the marmot eradication on Sud Island, we had two guys there for a little bit over 2 months, and they used different kinds of traps. And near the end, shooting was very important because there was very steep-sided slopes that the marmots occupied, but you weren't able to get down to those areas to trap. And so they used long-range shooting. On the rabbit island, Poa, that effort started in late February, and the four trappers on that island endured maybe the worst winter storm in 10 years. And they set out traps, too. That was how most of the rabbits were taken. But some of the rabbits also were on inaccessible slopes, and so they used night vision device and heat infrared scopes to detect the rabbits at night and used long-range shooting there, too.
Hunting and trapping on Poa had to stop because the seabirds, whose habitat the refuge was trying to maintain, returned. That's also why the effort didn't get off the ground on nearby Tangik Island. Both are just east of Accutan. An even larger effort to eradicate foxes from Kanaga Island, just west of Adak, was also undertaken this year. The foxes were stocked there by the Russians when they owned Alaska. Delahanty says even though they've been there for a long time, they are still considered an invasive species.
Our job on this National Wildlife Refuge is to maintain and protect native biodiversity. And we would argue that they're really not part of the natural system, whether they're there for 5 years or 200 years. They really don't belong and they disrupt the natural system and they remain an invasive.
The refuge contracted with the United States Department of Agriculture Wildlife Services Division to conduct the eradication efforts. Some of the hunters and trappers employed were from Alaska, and others were from out of state. Last March, a number of organizations gathered in support to give the opportunity for a boy in Unalakleet to have a dog, and not just any dog, a service dog. Logan Erickson is 10 years old and is autistic. Lorelei Kanin from KNOM in Nome has the story.
Early in his life, Logan Erickson developed normally and talked for a brief period. However, when he was 1 year old, he stopped speaking. The Erickson family later learned Logan has autism, a disorder that affects a person's social development and ability to communicate. Having an autistic child itself is difficult. Being the parent of an autistic child in Bush, Alaska, where resources are limited, even more so. Well, Iditarod musher Dee Dee John Rowe is a good friend of Logan's family and made a visit to the coastal community last year. She brought with her a dog by the name of Mr. Miyagi. John Rowe and Logan's mother both noticed Logan's connection with the dog, and after her visit, John Rowe and others got support from the Iditarod Trail Committee to raise money to get a service dog for Logan. A specially trained dog can cost up to $12,000, and for a family in Unalakleet, that's a tall order. However, with the Iditarod fully backing the cause, the Erickson family has received an outpouring of support from organizations and individuals throughout the state. And now, five members of the Erickson family are in Xenia, Ohio, for an intense 11 days of training. The organization, called Four Paws for Ability, trains service dogs for children with special needs. Four Paws selected a yellow lab for Logan, and his name is Juke. Logan's mother, Donna Erickson, says Juke is trained specifically for Logan's needs. Like a bloodhound, Juke is being trained to search for Logan when he's lost.
Logan doesn't talk. He has no way to communicate, and he does what's called an autism bolting, meaning he'll just disappear from your sight, run, and go out the door. And it's kind of terrifying because we live by the ocean.
Every morning this week, the Erickson spent time training Juke to track Logan in parks among the trees and in busy places like malls. And Facebook videos show Juke's success in finding his new friend. And further, Erickson says Juke is also being trained to calm Logan when he experiences meltdowns when overstimulated.
When he has a meltdown, he screams, tantrums, and panics. And Juke is trained to what's called nuzzle. It has a calming effect on the child, so he nuzzles Logan with his nose and puts his weight on him, either put his head on his lap or scoot up next to him, and that stops the tantrum, and that seems to calm most autistic kids down. And it's already happened with Logan. It happened in the hotel, so we're very pleased with our service dog already.
The Erickson's have two more days of training at the Four Paws for Ability Agency. Donna expressed her thanks to everyone who supported them in providing a specially trained dog for their son. She says they're already seeing positive signs that bring a lot of hope.
Just this past week, our family has never heard Logan say as many words as he had in his entire 10 years of living. He has been saying Juke's name and saying, my Juke, you know, when we're riding in the car. Or he's been saying simple commands like, please, open.
Juke will fly home to Unalakleet with the Erickson's this coming weekend. Juke, as a service dog, has special permission to sit with Logan on all the flights on their way home. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lorelei Kinnean.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Jacqueline Estes and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Jay Barrett in Kodiak, and Lorelei Kinnean in Nome. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by the Center for Distance Education at UAF, offering online courses from any location. Information at distance.uaf.edu. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a pre-existing medical condition, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the new temporary federal insurance program being administered by ACHIA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. The program is for those with qualifying pre-existing conditions and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months. Talk to an independent insurance broker or go online to achia.com. This message sponsored by ACHIA Fed.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.